Hey Columbine, welcome. So glad you're here with us today as we continue online until we get to be back together, which that Sunday is approaching here eventually. You know, this week is a really special week. I'm outside right now as the sun is setting, and it feels like a sort of sunset of sorts, an end of a day, but a really long day. The day that we have been studying this book has led us through Genesis through Revelation, the themes of being alive in creation, coming alive in the story of Jesus, following into being alive in a global uprising of people, the early disciples, following the gospel, and finally coming alive in the Spirit of God, breaking out throughout all of creation. And that ends with Revelation. So for Steve and I, it has been a joy to lead discussion groups, Bible studies, and preaching through Genesis to Revelation. How many of us have read through this Bible in that way? It's also been such a great companion guide for this last year of COVID, right? It has been something that has been a light at the end of the tunnel, a joy for me personally to connect with a small group every week. And so I want to thank all of you who have been in small groups, who have participated. There's like 50 some of you who showed up every week in person, outside, or on Zoom to hash through these discussions about how they apply to our lives. And then to you who have been leaders, we thank you for sharing your time, your heart, your life, and your stories as you have been willing to engage in this journey and leading others. So thank you, thank you, thank you. The next couple weeks at the Clement Amphitheater, as we have Sunday morning outdoor worship at 9 a.m., I invite those of you who have been in the study to show up. We have a gift for you, kind of a celebratory gift, and would love to hear your stories of reflection. So thank you. For those of you who have been just tracking along with us, either reading or through Sundays, thank you for your participation. 52 weeks, a trek through the Bible. And here we are wrapping up in the book of Revelation. And so with Revelation, we ask the question, along with Brian McLaren, of what is this big story all about? As we've gone through this journey, what have we learned about the core story of God? What is God doing in creation, in the message of the Bible, and today in our lives? I love asking that question to people because I think for us to understand in our own lives, what is God doing in our own lives? We also need to understand, what do we believe God is doing in all of time and all of history? What do we believe the story is that the Bible is communicating? And then how do we place ourselves in that story? One of the things that authors who, you know, work with child faith formation encourage adults, parents, and grandparents to know what the big story of God is so that we can tell stories of our own life that place us in that, right? But as adults, when we're asked what is the big story of God, we also often come to a place of, feeling overwhelmed or unable to say, what the big story of God is? What is the story of Genesis to Revelation? And so that's my question for you today. That's my takeaway question. What would you say is the big story? What's the main point? Why do we read the Bible? Some of you would say, I don't. Why would you? Or what would it have for us? Brian McLaren says what it has for us is a book of love unfolding in people, a book of promises, of hope. And as we get to Revelation, where some people may read the end of the story and Revelation has final judgment and scary and end times as doom, Brian McLaren says, no, this ending is an ending of hope with a huge celebration at the end of all time. Jesus' words in Revelation 21 say, "Look around you. I am making all things new." And so this story, Brian McLaren says, has two main themes that he kind of highlights in this last chapter. The first main theme is this very theme of celebration, of God making all things new, with a looking back at what has been done, a looking around at this community, and a looking forward to future renewal and joy. There's this vision of this remade heaven and a remade earth, and the dwelling place of God being with all of mankind again. This sort of vision of renewal and abundance and joy, harmony and community, true communion of oneness. With this, we talked about it last week too, this great celebration of a wedding celebration, of a love of two partners, of two souls and two hearts coming together. And so here's the second image that McLaren leaves us with for this great big story. So point two, the second way that McLaren wants to remind us of the theme of this big story, and I love this, as he says, well, let's let Jesus have the final word. And so he chooses a story of Jesus, a parable, that he feels like is the heart of the whole story of the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation. And it is the story of the lost child, the prodigal child or the prodigal son. It is found in Luke 15, and that's our scripture for today. In Luke 15, there are a grouping of all the lost parables. And so we have the lost coin, and the lost son, and the lost sheep. The kids, ironically, always love the lost sheep parable the most. It's amazing to me as they hear it. Jeannie told it at Vacation Bible School. This idea of Jesus who comes after the lost and goes and looks in the dark and scary places for the lost sheep. For some reason, that image sticks with kids. It impresses upon them. It's a story of compassion and love, an image of compassion and love. And so hear now the words from the message of the lost son parable, as Jesus told it in Matthew. Oh, I have mosquitoes everywhere. I don't think there's going to be mosquitoes when the world is remade, hopefully. So hear now the passage, and it's kind of a longer reading. So just sit back and listen, and then we'll talk about it for a minute. So, the story of the lost son is found in the message, verse 11. And then Jesus said, "There once was a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, 'Father, I want right now what is coming to me,' as in his inheritance. So the father divided the property between the two brothers, and it wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined, he wasted everything he had. Some commentators say in wild living. After he had gone through all of his money, there was a bad famine and all through the country, and he began to feel it. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to feed slop to his pigs. The son was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs and the pig slop, but no one gave him even scraps. So that brought him to his senses. He said, as he looked around, 'All these farmhands working for my father sit down to three meals a day, and here I am starving to death in this foreign land. I'll go back to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against God and before you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Take me on as a hired hand.' And as he came to his senses, he got right up and went home to his father. When he was still far away off, his father saw him, his heart pounding. He ran out, embraced him, kissed him. The son started his speech. 'Father, I've sinned against God, and I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son ever again.' The father was not listening. He was calling to the servants, "Quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then get a prize-winning heifer, and roast it. We are going to feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead and now alive, given up for lost and now found." And they began to have a wonderful time. I guess the story wouldn't be complete with also saying that this older brother, who had been working out in the field this whole time, came in at the end of the day. As he approached the house, he heard music and dancing. Calling over one of the houseboys, he asked, "What is going on?" And the house helper said, "Your brother came home and your father has ordered a feast, barbecue beef, because he has him home safe and sound." The older brother stomped off in an angry sulk and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, Look how many years I have stayed here serving you, never giving you one moment of grief. But have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours, who has thrown away your money on whores, shows up, and you go all out with a feast." His father said, "Son, you don't understand. You are with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time, and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead. Now he is alive. He was lost, and now he has found." I love the story. Why do you think McLaren chose this story? Out of all the parables about all the sayings of Jesus, why did McLaren choose this parable of the lost son, the lost child, to embody the whole message of the story of God? I often ask in this story too, who do you find yourself relating to in this? Do you relate to the older son who feels like you have always been obeying the rules? Do you relate to the lost son who's walked away for a long time, who's made frivolous, excessive mistakes, wasted time, wasted money, and had to go back to ask for forgiveness? Or do you feel like the father? It's a full heart, this parent, ready to love and welcome and forgive. When we put this parable next to the whole story of the Bible, it not only helps us look forward to the ending, an ending of joy and celebration, but it helps us in this really true and deep way see this story of God as a story where there's room for mistakes. There's going to be collectively and individually mornings where we wake up in the pigsty of life, where we have wasted time, we've been frivolous, we've made huge mistakes. And yet it's a story of welcome, of forgiveness, of love and abundance. This always welcome home. This abundant love. The son, this child, when he leaves the house, sort of slaps his father in the face, saying, "Give me your inheritance. Basically, I'm ready for you to be dead." And even after this great offense, which the whole town would have known about, we see the father come running out of this house, running through the city with open arms, willing to accept, so ready to accept the son back. He doesn't need to hear the apology. He doesn't need to ask for forgiveness. This love overflows. So, for me, I love this as the one story that McLaren chooses. Why? Because it's this great reminder There's places for all, and in God's kingdom, at God's table, in God's house, there is space for everyone. There's space for everyone. And you know what? The journey is messy and sloppy. We take the wrong turns. We walk away from the very place that is home. And yet in the end, we make our way home, and there is love waiting for us. There is a place for us at the table, a banquet and a celebration. So the story is a story of redemption, of renewal, of love and abundance. There's so many parts of this story that we continue to wrestle with too. There's nothing about the story of God that is simple. It doesn't fit in a nice and easy box. There's lots of hard passages. I love that my kids now can read the Bible, but they ask me these questions and I don't know all the answers. The invitation is to keep walking, to keep wrestling, to stay in this journey. Because ultimately, it is a journey. And while we are done with the book, we make the road by walking it. Walking. Our faith, the journey is each and every day. The reality is that we make the way in life, in faith, and in all things through walking. Even as we struggle with what is this big story of God and how does it relate to our story. So here we are at the end of this journey. The final invitation in this is to ask this question of what kind of story do we want to live in? How are we telling our own stories? McLaren has helped me clarify not only how I read the Bible, but the kind of story of faith and courage that I want to live into. This story where love ends and all of creation leans towards restoration and renewal and one great big celebration at the end of time. Yeah, of course, there's so much mystery about what that would look like. And as pastors and as people, we lean into that mystery every time we're with a loved one who passes away, or every time we go to a funeral of a beloved friend and wonder, where are they? What does that look like? What is next? There is no 1, 2, 3 point of what is next. But the story leans towards an image and a vision of celebration and of community. Community of love. And perfect community with a God who is community as well. I wish we could write a note back to each other of what it's like on the other side. We don't know. But my hope is that we, as we continue to read and study scripture, that our minds and our hearts are opened in wonder and in grace about what is this big story unfolding in our time that we get to be a part of. So thanks for being on this journey with us. It continues. It's not over yet. Let's keep on.